David Letterman is here. Always punctual. Very excited to have Dave here. Dave, let me see Dave. There he is. Look at the legend.
Truly a professional.
The legend
shows
is walking
up on time.
And a professional. You show up on time, unlike these non-professionals. What mic is Dave on? One? All right. How are
Hi,
you?
Howard.
You look great.
Thank you. I'm fine.
See, this is my
it's
fantasy.
It's nice to hear the theme.
Is that the real David Letterman?
Hi, Robin.
That is,
how
that
are
is
you?
The real David Letterman, not the fake David Letterman that we feature on the show so many times.
I get in arguments with people about that.
I know.
They say, no, we heard you. We heard you. I said, no, I haven't been on Howard's show in years. We heard you 2 days ago.
You're on every day. And you're very edgy when you're on our show. It's so great.
And I hope funnier than the real David Letterman.
You're the funniest.
How you doing, Howard?
I'm doing good. You see, when I look at you, I see a man who looks relaxed and younger than when you were even on TV. And I fantasize that if I retired, I would have this youthful look. I feel a bit burnt out. Are you, now that you are retired, even though you're coming out of retirement, but are you more relaxed and refreshed in a sense?
Wow, that's two questions in one, relaxed and refreshed, both of which would need to be substantiated medically.
Yes.
And
no, how do you feel? I mean, don't you feel this sense of like, hey, I've accomplished everything I needed to accomplish?
No. That's a myth.
Is it?
For me, it's a myth. It's here's the thing. Everything was all right until I had a birthday. I felt right up until my birthday, I felt relaxed and refreshed.
Right.
And then I had my birthday.
How long ago was this?
April.
Okay.
70.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. And so then I stopped feeling so relaxed and refreshed because at 70, what I've learned is old people drop dead.
Yeah. Can you still run? Because you were a big runner. Can you still run at 70?
Yes.
Can you still go to the gym and work out? Because I find everything now hurts me for too long. There's no recovery.
Right. Yeah, you're right about that. But on my 70th birthday, I ran 10 miles.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I'm not finished yet. But I.
Wow. You're like that guy who still takes going. 5 days to finish the marathon.
That's right.
I watch that marathon sometimes, and there's somebody who finishes like 3 days later.
That's right.
And I'm like, were they even trying to run?
They're putting away the stage. You know, the things and the.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You ran 10 miles.
10 miles. It was very slow, but I just felt like I had to do it. And, but the other thing that was, and this is only interesting to me.
Right.
But by the way, I'm very happy to see you.
I'm happy to see you too.
And I'll tell you something. When I left the show, I thought, well, a lot of people will want me on shows.
Yes.
No one wanted me on shows.
Is that really true? No one has, Jimmy Kimmel idolizes you.
Jimmy Kimmel has been very nice to me.
Right.
And I was on his show.
Right.
And I'm going to be on it again in October.
Right.
Unless, of course, I drop dead.
Which is always possible. By the way, in all seriousness, is that one of your biggest fears? Not dropping dead so much, but your dad died young, right?
Yeah, he 57.
And had his first heart attack when he was 30.
In his 30s,
In his 30s. And your dad, I didn't know this, was a florist, but he had fantasies of becoming a writer.
Right.
And was that heartbreaking to you to see your dad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if I told you about it, but they used to... in the Sunday supplement in certain newspapers, you would get Parade magazine.
Right.
Is it still in publication?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You know,
I actually read it.
Oh, like
like your dad.
And they had a, you could take the famous writer's test.
Right.
They had an advertisement. It was a, I don't know what the deal was, but so you'd fill out a thing. They'd send you a booklet to see if you were good enough to be a writer. And my poor father sent off for the famous writer's test booklet to see if he had what it takes to be a writer. And lo and behold, turns out he had what it takes to be a writer.
What do you know?
But he, but couldn't afford then the follow-up lessons to become a certified writer.
And as a kid, when you saw that, was it heartbreaking to you?
A little. It's more heartbreaking now as I think about it, because at the time you just think, well, that's what dads do. You know, this is what my dad's doing. And he was very entertaining, and musically he was crazy. He could play like a pipe organ, just sit down and just go crazy on it.
And you don't play any instruments
yourself? I can't. No, I want to, but I can't.
Are you... Do you have a love of music? Were you in, like, I could never tell with you, because one time I was doing your show and you leaned into me. There was somebody, a musician or something, and you said something like, look at this guy. Like, almost like with, like, laughing.
Disdain?
Yeah, disdain. But I don't know. Like, I know you loved Warren Zevon. Mm-hmm. When he was a guest on the show, I mean, the man was dying.
Right.
And you had him on, and it was amazing. I thought that was really great to have him on. And I remember, too, when I was watching it, the guy was making jokes about dying, and you were almost like, geez, you know.
It was very awkward.
It's really awkward.
It was very awkward.
And you almost didn't know what to say. You know, you were almost speechless about it. But,
yes.
But you loved Warren Zevon, right? You
loved I really did. I liked his I liked his lyrics. I thought it was rock and roll music in a different direction, because the lyrics were literary in allusion almost,
right.
and stories that other people were not writing music about.
In retirement, are you listening to new music, or are you
listening?
You are?
Yeah.
Do you like anyone in particular you want to turn us on to?
No, I don't. My problem is I like a lot of new music. I have no idea who they are.
You're right. That's sort of where I'm at this point, right? But when you got that award, the national medal with Obama sitting there and all that, and you're sitting next to Led Zeppelin, that had to be kind of cool,
that
right?
Yeah, that was cool. But I'll tell you, just as cool for me was Buddy Guy.
You were a Buddy Guy fan.
Well, became a Buddy Guy fan. He had been on the show. He was a friend of Paul's. And I kind of would verify musical interests through Paul.
Right.
And if Paul liked them, I thought they got to be the real thing. And the story of Buddy Guy is so compelling, and his talent. And when you hear him play that guitar after knowing the story,
right,
it was great.
But when you'd have on Eddie Vedder,
right, tremendous.
You love yep. Pearl Jam, right?
Yep.
So it's not disdain. You really do. You enjoy these guys, and do they move you emotionally?
Music
gets to you.
Well, that's one of the great things about music, isn't it? I mean, this is no revelation. And I'll tell you, the episode that you cite,
Warren Zevon.
Well, whenever I leaned over and said, hey, look at this guy.
Yeah.
I was probably trying to impress you with being disdainful of
life. I want to lean over and say, well, look at me. I'm a mess. I can't laugh at that guy. It's unreal.
But, you know, I'm a different person now, I think. You're a different person than you were then, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know what? I tried, knowing you were coming in, I tried to go back and look at a lot of moments from your show that, like, were kind of iconic. Do you ever?
No.
I started looking at all the different episodes.
They're awful.
Oh, no, they're not.
Yeah.
Mine were awful.
No, I cringe
when I see myself on your show. I go, how the fuck did I do this show and make such an asshole out of myself? I just cringe when I see it. The one episode I kind of was able to watch for a little bit was when I came on dressed as a woman. And I
you
was
like that one.
I did.
That's the one you could watch.
But I remember you were
a
concerned.
Fan favorite.
You said, what am I going to interview Howard as some sort of character? I go, no, I'll just be Howard, but I just want to wear women's clothing.
Right.
And it worked out just fine, in my mind, at least.
Good.
But the guy that I was most impressed with on your show was Chris Farley. He was absolutely delightful with you. There were certain people who vibed with you. And I got to wondering, were you thrilled by Chris Farley? Well, he was physical, and he was just so funny with you.
Yeah. excuse me. I don't know. In those days, that was back at NBC.
Right.
I had so many other things on my mind then. I don't know if I appreciated Chris Farley in a way I would. In many ways, I wish I could start the show over now.
Yes.
Because I'm a different person. I'm mature. I have a better understanding of the world around me and of the interaction with humans.
Is that why you can't watch the old shows? Because you look at the old you and go, geez, I want to teach this guy something.
Perhaps that's one reason. But I can't look through my high school yearbook. I can't look at the pictures of me when I was a kid.
I have a horrible feeling. Somebody the other night had like a little game we were playing with the dice, and they asked you questions. Do you have any regrets?
Oh, God.
And I went, oh, fuck. I said, this is the only thing I want to admit to them. I did an interview once with Robin Williams 100 years ago and Will Ferrell, and I was such an asshole to these guys that the week before Robin Williams died, I was like, I didn't know he was dying.
Right.
I didn't know he was going to kill himself. I said, I want to call him and apologize to him because I was such a fucking moron, and I love Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what happened, and there's a couple of people I really feel this way about, and like when I was watching your old clips, though, not that you ever did that.
Why would you watch the old clips?
Of you?
Yeah.
Because, A, I think I wanted to remind myself of why I love you so much.
Oh,
you have
please.
Such an innovator, and
no,
what you did
no,
for
no,
Late
no,
Night.
No,
you know,
no.
You know, I just told the audience this morning. Carson was doing, yes, I know you worshipped him, but he was doing it, and it was feeling old, and it just was getting old. And then you came in, and you just made something new happen in
right.
Late Night. It was suddenly hip and cool.
Right, for about 3 years.
No, it was very hip and cool. And, you know, like when Madonna would come on and curse.
Yeah.
Okay, she cursed like 14 times, said, fuck, I don't know what she said. At the time when you're in that, are you thinking, this is the shittiest show ever, she's ruining this interview, or are you recognizing that this is going to be something they play over and over again for the rest of you know your career because
yeah.
it's so great? Do you know it's great?
Sometimes, I'm a completely different person now.
Right.
And I would be so much more better equipped to view the immediate surroundings of that show now than I was when Madonna was on.
Right.
We used to have a guy on who was a cartoonist out of Cleveland, very very funny guy.
Which guy you're talking about?
Yeah,
not the Harvey.
Yeah,
Pekar.
Harvey Pekar.
Right. Okay.
And he was great. He was tremendous. He would just go after stuff. He would whine. He would go after me. He would go after the network. He would go after everything in a very committed way. It wasn't a gag. It wasn't an act. He would really go to work on you.
Right. And he meant every word of what he was
yes,
saying.
Yes, he was anti-establishment in a way that you don't see guys like that anymore. And that used to really upset me because I just thought, come on, Harvey, don't do this to us. Come on, just play the game, blah, 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 blah. Now, geez, I wish I could have had Harvey on every night.
Right.
Because that was tremendous.
And it was something original. It was
yeah.
not a guy playing the Hollywood
That's
game.
Right.
And he was being, in the same respect, I got to ask you a couple of questions about the old show. This kid, the actor, the one who put his foot in your face, you know who I'm talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix.
Not Joaquin Phoenix. It was, I can't think of the guy's name.
Crispin Glover.
Thank you. Crispin Glover,
yeah.
Yeah, he came on, he was frantic, he was nuts, and then he does like a karate thing
right,
with his foot.
He's
going to kick
you
in the
yeah.
face. You walked off the show. I believe you were, I don't think there was anything fake about it. I think you were genuinely nervous that this guy was going to actually go
yeah.
berserk,
That's
right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And now when you look at that, do you see that as great television, or do you still say there's something completely unhinged about this guy?
Again, now, yeah, you pray for something like that, but at the time, it was my career.
Right.
Yeah, I was so self-absorbed, needlessly self-absorbed. It had, because I'm following Johnny Carson, I don't know what's going to happen. There's a million guys lined up to take my job.
Right.
Every night was life and death. And so I was just a dope, just really a dope to be. And I was young, you know. And you think?
Do you think you were insecure? In other words,
oh God, because you know, in show business, you think because I had already blown one shot, the morning show,
yeah.
And you think, okay, well, you could be done.
And how many? And this was your dream to have
yeah,
a talk show, and
right.
you finally got it.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't realize you had kind of like we know you had that plan to go do stand up in Los Angeles. But while you were doing stand-up, you had some TV gigs. You did everything
right.
from game shows
That's
to...
Right.
You did all that traditional stuff.
Yes.
And that probably killed you because your dream the whole time was to have your own talk show, right?
Right, exactly.
It's frustrating when you have it in your head what you want to do and you can't get it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so,
and then when you do get it, you're scared silly that somebody's going to take it away from you.
That's why I always thought... that when you had the opportunity to appoint someone to the 12:30 slot when you moved to 11:30 on CBS, that's why I thought you'd put on Tom Snyder. You said to yourself, you know what? Snyder isn't a threat.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Now, see, that is more calculating than even I was capable of then.
Really?
Here was the logic of that before I knew anything about demographics or anything.
Right.
I really didn't know anything. Tom Snyder was doing a fairly successful show
yeah.
at NBC, The Tomorrow Show.
Yeah.
Today Show, Tonight Show, Tomorrow Show. What a lovely idea.
Perfect.
And who didn't love... You had some rubs with Tom Snyder, right?
Yeah, but I loved it. I mean, I went on there in a very calculated way and had a fight with him.
Yeah.
Because I knew it would have been boring otherwise.
But wasn't he great? He was great.
He was great. Yeah. And he was committed to, like, yelling at me. Yeah. And I'm and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm playing at this. Is he for real right now? And I think he was.
Yeah. Yes, he was.
But he recognized it was good television, I think.
I don't know about that.
But I think
he wanted to deck you.
Yeah, but that's another thing I can't watch. I cannot watch that interaction between me and Tom Snyder.
But he, they fire Tom.
Right.
And bring me in. Yeah. So I think, holy crap, what about all of the Tom Snyder fans? You know, they're going to be incensed. They're going to be livid. They're going to be marching.
Right.
So when I had the opportunity much, much later... to give him back his show, theoretically, that's what I did.
Oh, that was the plan.
That's what it was.
I thought it was like, you know what, I'll put on a guy who's no way he could replace
me. No.
Because Tom Snyder was not gracious. Tell me if this is true. When you were guest hosting The Tonight Show, subbing for Johnny Carson, there's a famous story that Tom Snyder came by The Tonight Show to watch you walk out. Because he said, I can't wait to see this unknown guy flop. Have you ever heard that story before?
No, that's great.
Yeah, that Tom Snyder was sitting there going, hey, no one knows who David Letterman is. You know, you were fairly new on the scene.
Yep.
And he was there to ostensibly watch you fail. Like it would have been a good sport to feed you to the lions, you know?
It's just, show business really is
it's great.
The best.
Everyone's rooting for you.
But I, he had some kind of, and I loved him. I mean, and I love the old Tom Snyder better than I like the Tom Snyder that was on after us.
Right.
Because he was smoking. He was in the big chair. It was Edward R. Murrow.
Yes.
And his eyebrows were quite animated.
Yep.
And everything was just on the edge, deadly serious and fascinating.
Yes.
And it was great because it came on at like 1 o'clock.
You liked him.
Yeah. Because Johnny did an hour and a half. And at 1 o'clock, there was nothing on when I was a kid except Tom Snyder. So what was not the like?
Thing I was telling the audience before you came in, I said, it's so great. Like when you took over your own show after Johnny Carson, I love that Johnny or some producer there laid down the law that you couldn't have any brass instruments in the in the band.
Dave Tebbutt was the man's name.
Yeah. And by the way, like you cared about having brass instruments in your band. That shows you how unhip they were. Like, you know what I mean?
Dave Tebbutt was like Johnny's guy.
Right.
He had been at NBC forever, and I don't know what his official title had been, but later in his career, he was just Johnny's lookout guy. You know, he would, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
He came in, and we had this meeting, and we couldn't do a monologue. You could only do 3 jokes.
Can you imagine? Did you want to do a monologue?
No, I thought, great.
Great.
I can't do it. Yeah.
I would think a stand-up comic would want to do a monologue.
The only way you could get jokes to work would be in a club. If you could get a joke to work in a club, it's going to work. And if you're doing a nightly show, you don't have the opportunity to go to a club to see if they're going to work.
Did you like doing a nightly show in front of an audience?
Oh, yeah.
I
loved it. Yeah.
You loved that.
Yeah.
But I thought you had said that the night, I think it was after Hurricane Sandy, you did a TV show and there was no audience available.
Right.
You know, obviously. And there was this weather disaster, and you got to do it in front of just your TV audience.
Denzel Washington was the guest.
Yeah, and you said you loved it, right? It was kind of a neat experience.
As a one-off, sure.
Oh, but you liked that audience being there.
Yeah, you got to, the audience, because that's, if you make these people laugh, that's the only way I can go home feeling positive about myself.
That's what used to make me so nervous about doing your show, because all of a sudden, I'm used to working in a booth. I don't have to sit and worry about a live, and I'd be sitting there, and I go, wait, there's like silence here for a minute, and I was afraid to have real conversation, because like they weren't laughing, you know, and I was like, every 30 seconds, I thought I had to say something completely insane.
Yeah, me too. And what I found was... makes perfect sense. The worse the audience is, or the worse the material is, or as bad as I could be, and you're not getting that reinforcement, then the harder you try,
right.
And the harder you try, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
You know, the other thing I heard was that Johnny's producer friend there, who was trying to lay down the law for how your new show should go, was that you couldn't have any of the old school guests like Jimmy Stewart, George mm-hmm. Burns, Buddy mm-hmm. Hackett, mm-hmm. you know, and all those kind of people. And in a way, good, you know,
yeah.
who needs them?
He said to us, the great story that came out of that, we had a meeting, and it was me and Hal Gurney and Meryl Marco and I think our producer of the day, Barry Sand, and Dave Tebbett.
Right.
And Dave had a very gravelly voice. He says, so for example, let's just say that Bob Hope is arrested for selling dope.
Right.
You can't have him on to talk about selling dope. And nobody in the room could keep a straight face because we just thought, Bob Hope.
He's
selling weed.
Yeah, because he needs the money. And who even knows what that means? What do you mean I can't talk about that? Why can't I talk about that?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's weird. Like, Rodney Dangerfield was such a staple of The Tonight Show, and
right.
he'd come on and kill. Now, I went back and watched the old clips. Rodney did your show once.
Right.
And I sensed that you weren't happy with it. Like, he was doing his jokes, and that's not what you were after. That's not what you wanted from your guests. You wanted more reality. You wanted to hear about their lives maybe a little bit. And I sensed that you were, like, kind of disappointed in him. Am I crazy?
I don't know. I mean, who knows?
Am I studying this? Like,
but, you know, you're right. He was on, I think, just the one time, and he didn't like coming on. And
is that right?
Yeah.
And how did you know that?
Well, you hear things.
Oh, I see.
But I think it was more because he was, and other guys felt the same way, that I was going to try to interrupt them and be funny while they were doing their jokes.
And you knew enough to stay out of his way.
Well, yes, I did. But sometimes, who knew? You know, you can't tell. Because of my stupid ego, I wanted to show people that, well, I'm just as funny as A, B, and C. So.
Would you get competitive with a guy like Rodney and say, hey, you know, I've got to get my jokes in, too? And
maybe when I was a kid, yeah.
yeah.
Because I felt like every night I have to demonstrate that I'm funny and thereby worth watching. Now it seems completely misguided. And
right.
You talk about, you know, the regrets of youth.
Is the thing you're saying that you've learned now that you're older, that it's not always about you, that you can let somebody else shine and
right.
you can take a back seat to them?
Right. But the sad thing about show business is nobody tells you that.
Right.
Because you have to shine. And if you don't shine, there are 100 people in line shining more brightly than you are.
And isn't there also a paranoia that if I don't shine, the audience is all going to go away?
That's
that it's,
right.
It's up to me to carry the show every night.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know,
right. That guest is there one night. You're there every night.
Yeah. I got to come back the next night, which is, you learn later, is comfortable. That
right.
makes you comfortable. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it's like, every moment. You have to score every moment.
You mentioned the Joaquin Phoenix. Whenever I see these lists of, like, the greatest guests that ever did the David Letterman show, they point to this Joaquin Phoenix. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. But again, I could imagine at the time you saying to yourself, this kid's coming on. I think he's playing a character. I don't know. Unless he arranged it with you ahead of time, which I don't think he did. I don't know. Did he?
I knew what he was doing
you
ahead
did.
Of time, yeah.
Did you enjoy what he was doing, or were you saying, oh, Jesus?
Oh, no, I did enjoy it because it was, you know, like getting your work in on the heavy bag. You
right.
know, it was easy. It was batting practice.
It's funny. It was such a great moment. And then, like, you had him back a couple of months later for him to discuss what happened on there. It was never, he should never have appeared again, right?
Yeah.
Some people should never appear again. It was just so perfect.
Well, the master of that, of course, was Andy Kaufman.
That's the thing. Now, did they work that out with you ahead of time? Would Andy?
Andy was, I knew Andy for years. Everybody in L.A. knew Andy, and people in New York knew Andy, and then he moved
to
California.
But when you say you knew him, I mean, you knew him from comedy clubs.
Yeah, knew him from comedy clubs.
You didn't hang out with him.
No, we didn't right. go to dinner and stuff like that.
Right.
And he, gosh, he was peculiar, and yeah. you just loved it because you sort of thought, well, this guy is wasting his life, wasting his career by being so peculiar.
Right.
But instead, just the opposite happened. By being so peculiar, he became an enormous star.
The performer in you says, I could tell Andy how to be great. But meanwhile, Andy was great doing what
That's
he
right.
did.
That's right. And now, you know, you think about him, had he lived, what
would he have done?
Yeah, exactly. What would he have done? But he was tremendous. And he was always a gentleman to me and always would let me know, I'm going to do A, B, and C, and don't get upset when the wrestler hits me.
Oh, you knew about that?
Yeah, yeah. Because,
I mean, it looked terrible. I mean, it really looked like you were upset. And when this guy, Jerry Lawler, he didn't seem to be in on the joke. Like, he really smacked Andy.
Yeah.
And I thought Andy got hurt. And I loved Andy. And it was like, I was like, oh, my God, he just got hurt on the David Letterman show. But what a fucking show that was, right?
The best thing about it was the next day or 2 days later in the Times, the New York Times
right.
writes this story up about Andy being assaulted on this talk show. And they refer to him, of course, their editorial policy, Mr. Kaufman, and the wrestler, Mr. Lawler.
So
and
funny.
I just thought, you're crazy. You're just, why? What are you wasting ink on this? And then the other thing, when he used to be on the daytime show, and I've told this many times, he, after each appearance, he would lean over to me and he said, be sure to send me the hate mail. He loved it.
So did you see the real side of Andy Kaufman? I mean, do you think you kind of knew him? And No,
don't think so. But he was courteous enough to include me. He didn't want to exclude me. He didn't want to put me in an awkward position. So I was his ad hoc partner in the bit.
Yeah, that's what was so nice about it. I didn't have that understanding when I would go on your show. I would hide my agenda and give a fake agenda to your producers, thinking that I was being slick.
Well, that's not useful.
No, not at all. And it was just ridiculous.
But, you know, as sometimes, like Andy Kaufman's manager, Bob Zamuda,
right,
would come and hang around the studio, and we wouldn't know, was that Andy? Was it Bob Zamuda? It just was bizarre.
Right.
And
but
why?
You weren't annoyed by it, were you?
Oh, we loved Andy. Oh, my God. Yeah, what's not to love, Andy? You take the night off, and you knew something peculiar was going to happen.
Don't you love when there's a guest on that you know is just going to do a great job? Like, to me, another guy that was great on your show was Jim Carrey. Like, he'd come out and just be funny.
Go to work.
Yeah. I mean, and when you know that's happening, it just elevates your spirit.
Right.
But conversely, when you have a starlet on, and I'm always trying to understand this, who kind of walks out, isn't really trying hard. I mean, yes, a good-looking woman, and that does generate ratings. But are you sitting there going, my God, what am I doing with my life? I mean, this person isn't even putting any energy into it. They're going on with this boring story. That's a real downer, isn't it?
Well, let's not limit it to starlets.
That's true.
It goes both ways. It's male, it's female.
You're right.
It's not endemic to females.
Right.
Yeah, but then again, I have those nights where they must think to the, I remember I had a really bad cold one night, and it got to the point where, I don't know, it doesn't happen this way in this show, but on our show, publicists would book the show.
Right.
And if you didn't take this star, then you weren't going to get that star because the same publicist controlled both of them. And
right.
You really had to suck up to the publicists.
Yes. And that's not you.
And so I'm I'm coughing and I'm wheezing and my nose is running. And after the show, the producer got into a scream and fight with the publicist because I may have infected their guest.
Oh, jeez.
And how dare I? How could I? Why would you let that happen? He's clearly contagious. I've got a guest here, and I just thought, okay.
Oh, this is so absurd, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever, now this is a very honest question, because we're sitting here now having a conversation, and for me, it's fabulous, and we're talking about, like, really interesting things, at least to me, and certainly, hopefully, to the audience. But when you were sitting there doing the show, and, you know, Charlize Theron's on, and she comes on, she looks magnificent, she's beautiful, and she's being engaging, and you have this conversation, do you start to think, like, oh, my God, there's something going on here between us? Because, I mean, I've had that. I'm actually sometimes let down. I go, a guest comes in, and we seem like we're really close, and then it's over. Can you get deluded into thinking you have an actual friendship with this person?
Yeah, it'll happen to you later today as well.
It will. But it will.
Because he's walking like, out, go, he's not going to call you.
No, I'm going to go like, wow, Dave and I are very close. You know what I mean? It's such, I think it's a mind fuck in some respects.
Well,
no?
It didn't happen to me much. It would happen occasionally.
Right.
And then I always thought, oh, well, of course, this person acts like they're enjoying talking to me because this person is an actor.
Right.
So I always would think there's no way in heck that they could actually be fond of this experience. They're just acting.
And I guess they are, right?
Yeah, I think they are.
Like when Drew Barrymore,
in our case.
Yes, in our case. When Drew Barrymore gets up on a desk and shows you her breasts, like you go, well, maybe she's into me. I don't know. Or maybe there's an intimacy between us that I'm not, you know, I'm not sure of.
See, you make a good point there. You make an awfully good point because I don't want to sound... and I probably will, but for a man, if a young, lovely woman, let's just say it wasn't a TV show.
Right.
Let's just say I'm a guy in an office with a desk.
Yeah.
And it's, yes, come in. Oh, Drew Barrymore is here to see you. Oh, hi, Drew. And she jumps up on your desk and takes off her top. How can you not be affected by that?
Of course. You know? And you go home and you think, well, maybe she's into me.
Did it go that far?
No, you didn't go that far. I would get confused by everything.
It was confusing.
Did any real friendships come out of the show in terms of a guest?
Yes, like where friendships.
There would be? Like you would actually say, hey, you know what? This is someone I think I could be friendly with.
Right, right. But only after years and years and years and years and years.
Of them being on the show.
Yes.
Right.
Because I just felt like, well, they don't want me as a friend, and I don't know that I want them as a friend.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. Not that I didn't want them as friends. It also seemed like
you became Mr. Kiwanis Club at a certain point.
What do you mean?
You've got when I first knew you.
Yeah.
You had no friends.
I had no friends. All I thought about was work.
Yeah,
and radio.
Me too.
Yeah.
It was the same thing.
Yeah,
and that's all I wanted to think about. I was so self-centered. And the biggest mistake I made was delaying having a family because I just didn't want anything to interfere with the show.
Yeah. But as far as Mr. Kiwanis, I came to a realization. I said, you know, I do enjoy meeting people in my industry. It is nice to hear people. Like, I've always thought of myself as not being in show business, that I'm the outsider, this and that and the other thing. But I am in show business.
Right.
I do work in an industry. I mean, in some way, I'm
That's
in
right.
it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so I don't want to say I'm Mr. Kiwanis, but I do have some friends in show business now.
But you, and I think you and I have some mutual friends.
Yes, we do. In fact, we almost had dinner a few times,
That's right.
but you backed out.
Why is that?
Robin, honest to God.
I figured it was me.
You have to, no, it wasn't you. Right. It was a scheduling problem.
Was it?
Oh. Yeah, scheduling. I'd have dinner with you.
You hear Howard's name and you have a schedule.
Maybe. Let me ask you this about about your philosophy of talk shows.
Okay.
When Sacha Baron Cohen, who played Borat in the movie, and I think is a brilliant guy, when he says to you, I want to come on as a character, I want to come on and I want you to interview Borat, does that send chills up your spine in a sense? Because you're interested in the real guy, right?
I lose interest in it because, you know, I'm in on the joke.
Right.
You know, I'm not a guy you meet on the bus.
You don't want to do a sketch.
Uh-uh. I don't want to be the part of a comedy team.
Right.
You know, let me in. If Andy Kaufman would let me in on what was going on, then Borat's got to let me in on what was going on.
That's right. And you had to be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And only to the good. You know, I'm not looking to subvert what he's up to. I'm looking to support what he's up to.
I think some people feel like if you're not in on it, it'll be a better surprise or something. That's sort of my philosophy, but I guess that doesn't really work. I thought that one of the clips I went back and watched, the first appearance that Sam Kinison, he did stand up on your show, it was mind-blowingly good.
Yeah.
Am I right? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Well, I think that was, I don't know what other shows he had done.
Not many.
But his early stuff, that was his strong stuff. He was a combination of menacing, because he comes out in this, you don't know what you're looking at, with
the beret
and the hair and the overcoat.
And he killed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would love how he would wind himself up and then just start screaming at a fever pitch. And it really was delightful.
And he also did a thing I'd never seen on your show before as a comic. He left the stage and walked up into the audience and started yelling at the audience and screaming at them. And it was just, it was really, really, I just thought, a breakthrough.
No, and again, it's one of these situations where, of course, he had other demons, as do a lot of people. One wonders what that would have been had he lived 5 more years, 10 more years, 20 more years, a full life. But
similarly, not similarly, unlike Sam, who did so well, you have said, I think, that Andy Rooney was just a despicable kind of guest, that he came on the show. And I loved Andy Rooney, too. And I met him once at some CBS function when I was working for CBS. And he was absolutely nasty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was really that guy.
He was a curmudgeon and beyond. Hal Gurney, who was the director of our show, I had a cup of coffee.
Yeah, you gotta go pee.
I don't have it now.
You want a cup of coffee?
He lost it. He needs it.
You want your cup of
coffee? Thanks, Robert.
Wait a second. Let me yell at my staff. Where is Mr. Letterman's coffee?
No, it's not.
There it is.
Thank you, Gary.
No sooner do you say it.
Wow.
That it's there.
Anyway, through Hal Gurney, I met Jack Parr.
Right.
And so for like 6 weeks, Jack Parr and I became really, really good friends.
Is that right?
Yeah. But I knew which way this was going to go.
Badly.
Badly. So we would go to Jack Parr's house like on a Sunday. And I can remember Jack said, oh, come out to the house, we'll play tennis.
Right.
And Jack had a house that he had named. And you know you're in trouble if a guy...
That's a rich guy.
It's Long Barn. Come on out to Long Barn.
Right.
So we go out to Long Barn, and it's a nice enough house on a cul-de-sac in a development. It's not like, oh, my God, it's Long Barn.
Yeah, Long Barn implies an estate.
Yeah, it's like Manderley.
Right.
No. Not, very nice house,
right.
But you don't name it. So we play tennis, and he's got a butler. It's blazing hot September afternoon, and the butler is dressed all in black, and we go in, and we have dinner. And then joining us for dinner is... an airline pilot, somebody else, and Andy Rooney.
Wow.
So I was there with my current girlfriend, and Andy Rooney starts grilling me about, are you married? And I said, no, I'm not married. He said, well, why not? And I said, well, I was married, but I got a divorce. And Andy Rooney says, well, why did you get a divorce?
Jeez.
And I said, well, I think it was my fault. I got married very, very young. He says, no, that's not it. That's not why you got a divorce. And I said, really? Why did I get a divorce? And he said, you weren't trying. People don't try. You just didn't try hard enough. And I said, oh, you know what? I have some letters I have to get to.
He's lecturing you.
Yeah.
And this is the first time you meet the guy.
That's right.
He's telling you why you did something.
That's right, yeah.
Holy cow.
And then it got to be where it's one of those deals where you'd be having dinner, and you'd be aware of something, and then it was, where's Jack? And then Hal would come over and say, I think we should leave now. Jack went to bed.
Oh, geez.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy, Jack was living a very formal life. I used to sit and fantasize, how did Jack Parr have an income? I mean, he only did The Tonight Show for a couple of years or something, and then, like, quit, leaving it to Johnny. But
his wife had a lot of money. I don't know where it came from. And he purchased a television station in Vermont.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in the days when you could buy a TV station for like $5 million.
Isn't it so disappointing sometimes when you meet your heroes? It's like, you know, Jack Parr, certainly for you, being a young guy.
Yeah, but I knew I was going to screw that up. The same with Johnny. I would always be so nervous around Johnny, I really couldn't enjoy the moment because I knew any minute he was going to say, okay, thanks.
Yeah, but you kind of evoke that in people, too. I know every time that's...
Do I really?
A certain
good
friend of ours says... I know you like that, but I know you don't believe this, but every time a certain friend of ours says, let's get together for dinner with Dave, I go, I'm up for it. I'd love to. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, geez, I wonder how that's going to go. It's probably going to get all fucked up, and, you know, I'll probably say something stupid like I named my house, and you'll walk out. And,
what is the name of your house, Howard?
Howard's Fart Manor. You know, but no... In all seriousness, you know, I think people do get nervous around you. You know what I want to know? When you retired, and you're gonna make fun of me for asking this, but when you retired, is it weird for you not to have an income. In other words, yes, you have plenty of money. And I know that psychologically, though, it can be weird. Your whole life you've had an income. You've had money coming in. Now, before you sign this Netflix deal, now money's just going out. And even though you have a lot of money, do you sit there?
Why does that amuse you, Robin? What is so funny about
because
that?
Because she knows
still
this
has
is
an
my
income.
This is my new. No, he doesn't. You no,
absolutely
seriously.
He does. You don't think he has investments paying him?
No. Yes, I understand. That's like a retirement income. I'm talking about. Does it ever freak you out that you don't see that paycheck coming in?
Yeah. Well, I went out and got a reverse mortgage because I was worried about the banks stealing my home.
Dave, come on. I mean, seriously, it is a weird thing all of a sudden.
I'll tell you how it's weird is psychologically. Yes. Again, you feel like if I'm not working and I don't get a regular check, I'm not worth anything.
Right. But, yes. And also that's your mojo, right?
Yeah. But believe me, in many other ways, I'm paying for it, or I'm getting paid, or I should be getting paid.
Yes.
I don't know.
This Netflix deal,
yeah.
Part of taking on this idea of doing 6 shows a year, it's not a heavy schedule. It's probably a schedule that you kind of in your mind think, yeah, I'm keeping my foot in this thing, right?
Not a heavy schedule.
Right?
6 shows a year.
Right. It's a nice schedule.
It's absolutely, because I vacillate. Do I want to go back to work? I don't know.
Right.
And so then you get the Netflix. People were very generous, very nice about this thing. And then I met these people called the Radical Brothers who do all of these great video projects. And the combination of the two of these guys, I thought, well, let's do this. This is something I want to do.
The Radical Brothers are going to be your, what, producers?
Yeah. They're a production company.
I see. You had a meeting with them, and you brought this gig to Netflix.
Right.
Did you meet with Ted Sarandos?
Yes.
Are you old?
Oh, and he, I was supposed to ask you if you would be on the show.
On what show?
The show we're talking about now.
Well, listen, I'm going to say no to you?
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I feel I'd have to.
Okay.
He could have said no to some of your people.
Yeah. Don't you ask me. By the way. What a disgrace you've turned into. Asking directly if I'd be a guest? What happened to you in retirement?
I don't know. I forgot the rules of show business.
Do you think you'll shave your beard for the new show?
No. I'll be buried with this.
The beard? This is it.
Yeah.
This is the way to go.
I guess.
Show business Dave always is clean shaven. I mean, this is a departure.
But I, honest to God, I got so tired of shaving every day. And then that's what I said when I first grew the beard. And now I don't know why I have it.
What will we do on the new show with these brothers? What are their names again?
The Radical Brothers.
Meanwhile, what do you mean Radical Brothers? Oh, that's the name of the company.
That's the name of the company,
What will we do with these Radical Brothers? What do you have in mind? Is it just going to be a straight interview? Are we, hopefully we're not, I mean, we're going to sit somewhere and talk, right? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea.
You have no idea?
I have no idea.
Come on, you must have visualized this show, the Netflix show.
Can we come out to Fart Manor?
Fart Manor, come out to the house? No. No, but you've already booked one guest, right?
Yes.
It's not me. It's
No, we've booked two. We've got two.
Who is the first guest?
I'm not going to tell you.
Why? We're building suspense?
No, I just, I've been told I can't say who it is.
Oh, the guest said, please don't say it.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder who it is.
Well, see, there you go.
Is it the mooch? I knew it.
It's working already.
You got the mooch.
Yeah.
Are you always on, is the comedy mind always thinking, because rumor has it, you went up to Netflix to discuss this thing, and instead of just walking in the building and having the meeting, you immediately pose as the doorman, and you began opening the door for everybody in the building. Am I correct? Is that true?
I don't think that's true. We'd have to look at the tape.
That is the word, that you immediately went into a comedy bit. And I hear it was a scream. You know I have a camera on you at all times, and I'm watching you. You know what I mean? I felt that some of this new show was prompted by Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. You like where Jerry's career went with that.
You know, I remember you used to say, with regard to a person you would like to be with, and God forbid if your wife was ever stricken ill and couldn't function, that you would then be the surrogate husband for the person and everything would be fine.
Right.
I feel that about Jerry. God forbid Jerry can't do his show, Comedians Drinking Coffee in Cars. Just give it to me.
You like that whole thing.
It's the only new good idea in the new generation of multi-platform television productions.
You're taken with it.
Yes. And here's what I admire about Jerry. Many things to admire about Jerry. But he puts together his little situation comedy, and everybody, they can't get enough of that.
Right.
Great.
Huge hit.
So we think, goodbye, Jerry. Thank you. We'll see you later.
Right.
And, you know, he does his stand-up. And then he comes back, and he goes to Snap or Crackle or Pop or wherever he goes.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, and what is it? Like, you get it on your clock radio? I don't know where it is.
It's hard to comprehend.
It's like a question of where you,
nobody, and he's fine that nobody knows where it is.
Right.
And then he amasses 100 episodes, and then he goes to Netflix, and they say, hey, you know, we'll give you $500 million for your little drinking coffee show.
Isn't it hard for guys like us to comprehend this? Because to me, the paradigm is, hey, we go to a network or we go to a radio station and we get a job. Now it's like, you go on this Crackle and no one's heard of it.
No.
It's hard to imagine.
Well, the hard thing for me is, and maybe the same thing would happen to you, I don't know. They would say, what do you want to do? And I would say, geez, you know, I kind of did it for 30 years.
You did.
Doesn't that
paralyze you?
But Jerry.
Jerry doesn't care.
Jerry doesn't care. He likes coffee.
Right.
He likes cars. He likes comics. So somebody says, well, there's your show right there. But how does that happen?
But Jerry also says to me.
Happened to you.
Jerry says to me, Howard, you work too hard. I don't understand what you're doing, this and that. But meanwhile, he is working. He's doing stand-up. He's always working.
He was in Australia for 2 weeks.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, the flight and back to Australia would kill me.
Absolutely. You would never do that.
No. Mm-mm.
So we're hoping with Netflix that it's not too much of a burden.
Oh, it won't be a burden. It'll be great because it'll all be. I'm coming. One of my big advantages in life is ignorance.
Right.
So if you're ignorant, there's nothing you can't ask a person.
But are you worried that because seriously, and I'm not doing. You reinvented late night. You did it all. Mm-hmm. You did this incredible body of work.
Yeah.
Are you worried? No, seriously. Are you worried that like, oh shit, I shouldn't be. I should just go away. I should follow the Johnny Carson thing and just kind of disappear.
That's a concern. But I'm not worried about it because I think it's going to be great, and it'll probably be the last thing I do. So I want it to be great.
Right.
I love the people at Netflix.
Yeah, nice people.
Ted is a nice guy. And the Radical Brothers are fantastic if you look at their body of work.
Right.
So, again, I'm the weak link in this chain. So I know they're not going to let it fail.
I think people are excited you're coming and doing something.
Well, that'll change.
Yeah, you'll beat that out of them. Yeah. I had an idea for you.
Yeah.
Comedians in vans who get coffee. And it would be similar to Jerry's, but different because it would be vans. Do you like that or would you be interested in that?
I do love that. I don't know why that's not a show.
Is Jerry your favorite stand-up? Because you tend to put yourself down as a stand-up. But, you know, people don't know this. Richard Pryor himself, when you first started doing stand-up, Richard Pryor said, there's one guy I want opening for me.
Oh, please.
And I want David Letterman.
No,
that is true.
No, it's not true.
Paul Mooney says it.
Oh, well, Paul.
Or did I just make that up?
Perhaps you made it up, but
seriously,
I'm going to go with that.
You were
that.
A very good stand-up.
No, mediocre.
But you got scouted by the Tonight Show very quickly.
Yeah, but I in those days, they were just looking for a guy in a suit with a pulse.
Oh, you can't take
Why
any credit.
Why are you
credit.
Putting yourself down like
You
that?
Got the Medal of Honor.
Because I
and
know,
where is that medal?
Where is your Kennedy Center? Where is your Kennedy Center medal? I saw you walking around with a ribbon and all.
Yeah,
no, seriously, where is that thing? Where do you keep that?
It's in Muncie, Indiana, right now.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, you have the museum of David Letterman.
It's not a museum.
Isn't it like Ball State?
Yes, I have a museum.
Your college
Good
has it.
God, no.
Why is that not in your house?
Because
shouldn't Harry see that?
No.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly Joe DiMaggio.
See, I sense you're a good dad. Around your son, you don't make it about you. And that's always a temptation. Is there ever that temptation with your son to say, look at what I've done. Come on, son. See, I'm the great David Letterman. Don't you know who I am? You know what I mean? We do all have those temptations.
Well, as you probably succumb to this, and I think all parents do, I just love making him laugh. Yeah. And if I can genuinely make the kid spit stuff at his nose, you know, then I feel like I'm a good dad.
I think you had kids at the right age.
Maybe.
When I had kids,
maybe
I was so. Very young and very consumed with myself, too much so. And I've said that to my kids in a very real way. I apologize to them.
How old are your kids now?
My oldest daughter is 34, and then I've got a 31-year-old and a 24-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, they're older kids now.
That's fantastic, though. Aren't those relationships...
They're great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I love them, and they're great people, and they're doing wonderful things with their life. But, boy, oh, boy, I wish I could have had some wisdom back then as a father. I wish I knew more.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having kids at an older age sometimes is better.
Maybe. But then again, on the other hand, I wish I had three kids. I don't have three kids because I just I was so glued to the idea of I've got to get this success via this show to the exclusion of everything else.
But you're
everything
right.
Everything else.
Your kids would have resented you for that attitude.
Who knows?
Who knows? Or maybe it would have opened you up.
Life is life. You make it work regardless.
When you're first starting out, all you can think about is career.
That's right.
You have to.
Yeah.
You've got to be that focused, even though a lot of it is wasted energy.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of it is wasted energy. A lot of it is just being led around by your own ego. You know, and that's not the best way to go through life.
When you retired, what was your day like? Was it a horrible bore? I pictured you maybe sitting and watching movies. Are you a movie fan? Do you like watching movies?
Yeah, I like movies, but I haven't seen a movie since I quit. We used to have a screening room right there in the building. So we would see every movie released.
So you don't see these superhero movies or anything?
No. I don't like... If a movie... if it can't really happen in life, I'm not going to go see that movie.
You can't see Superman fly. And
that's
all
right.
That.
Yeah, if that doesn't, unless it can actually happen,
but
I'm not
going. When
you were
a kid, you didn't read comic books?
No, my mother wouldn't let me have comic books.
Why?
You wanted
them and she would say no.
I didn't even want them. But I would go and, no, you can't have that. And so I didn't get it. And who cares?
I'm sorry to hear about
that. I would get Archie. She would let me have Archie.
Yeah, because that was wholesome.
That's right.
Yeah, but sir,
but it
she
also
really,
was sort Archie of real.
Was
the, yeah.
Archie was like, maybe. No wonder you don't like comic book movies.
It was real.
It was based in reality. Although Jughead had no reality, that cap he wore. But that's it. And by the way, I'm sorry to hear about the death of your mother recently, but I would think, did your...
90
what?
She's going to be 96.
96.
Mm-hmm.
And even it's always weird to lose your...
Died playing racquetball.
Is that true?
No.
Wow. But I would think maybe one of the sadnesses is that your dad... Did your dad get to see your great success?
No.
Do you ever fantasize that he could have seen what became of you?
I often... Like, my mom lived so long that we... At one point, I said, Mom, I said, you're not going to get the record. But she was such a fixture in my life.
Right.
And my father, conversely, was not.
Yeah.
And I always wondered what life would have been like the other way around. If my mother, sadly, had passed away at 57 and my dad lived till he was 96. I wonder what that dynamic would have been, or if they had stayed together and been alive all those years. I wonder what that would have been. Are your parents both still
They're
alive?
They're still alive.
What are their ages?
My father's 94, my mother's 89.
Holy gosh. Well, and that's great, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's great to see, but it's also, you know, I worry because they have such a symbiotic relationship that I'm really worried if one of them gets ill.
Yeah.
The other one's just going to fall apart rapidly.
Well, that's kind of the stereotype, isn't it?
Was your mom lonely?
No, I don't think she was lonely. Nothing killed her except the fact that she was 96.
Right.
She luckily did not have heart disease, did not have cancer, did not break a hip. And, you know, she was not active, but she could go out. She still liked to read. And we would visit, and she, some cognitive diminishment, but she was okay for 96.
So it was kind of shocking in a way, because she was okay.
No, she was slowing down. She wasn't one of these 96-year-olds who, you know, I'm 96 and I'm having the best sex of my life. One of those.
Yeah. Yeah, my mother's like, you know, she goes, getting old isn't for wimps. I mean, she's
that's right. That's what my mom would say, too.
She's having a hard time.
Yeah.
The thing with your mom that I heard was that she did not like Ed Sullivan because he would make the audience clap for the people. That's he would say, right. come on, let's hear it for those
let's
Beatles.
Really,
right? And she, yeah, and she hated that.
She hated that because she felt like if the audience liked them well enough to clap, they will clap. And don't make them clap if they don't want to clap.
And when you're a kid, that has such a powerful influence. I bet you didn't like Ed Sullivan for that reason. Did she have that kind of influence over you? It was like, yeah, she must be right.
No, there was a long list of reasons not to like Ed Sullivan.
Right.
Forcing people to clap was not one of them.
Well, the reason I didn't like Johnny was because of my mother. My mother hated Johnny. She felt he was arrogant. She She felt that he
cold,
would
aloof.
Cold, aloof. Yeah. Yeah, and she would lecture me about Johnny Carson. I was like, she must know something.
Right.
You know, I thought for sure.
Yeah.
But then again, I was naive. I mean, she broke the news to me that Liberace was gay. And I was like, what? You're kidding. I had no idea. Did your parents find you funny growing up? Were they thinking you were a guy who could actually make it as a comedian? Or was there any indication that you would be this funny and witty?
The guy who played the piano with the candelabra?
Yeah, he's gay.
Gay?
Yeah, I know, I didn't want to tell you.
Oh, Jesus.
Dave, was everything ad-lib? Like when Joaquin Phoenix is doing his thing, and you turn to him, and at one point you said a line like, gee, I wish you could have been here tonight. Or I wish Joaquin...
Mm-hmm.
Is that off the top of your head? Or
yes.
Did you? It was?
Yes.
That was like the quickest thing I had ever heard.
It's amazing, isn't it?
No, I mean, you're worth what they pay you.
Oh, for God's sakes, you do it every second of your day for the last 40 years.
Yes, but that was a stellar line.
Oh,
no.
How many stellar lines do you have in every... In
thousands, but well, I'm unusual. I'm like a genius.
Yeah, well...
But we're talking about you now.
The day is about you today, Dave.
I mean, it's the difference between a guy... in batting practice, jerking one out of the park, and in a game, grounding out to the shortstop. You know, it's just easy.
I didn't get to ask, what is your favorite movie of all time? Because I had this discussion with Jerry Seinfeld, and we named our top 10 movies. I'm curious, what is your favorite movie of all time?
Well,
do you have one?
Yeah, I have one that I always use as a placeholder, and I'm not sure that it holds up as my favorite movie of all time, but for the purpose of this conversation...
Go ahead.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Once Upon a Time in the West?
Yeah.
What movie?
Nobody ever chooses that.
See, that's kind of a cool answer. Did you choose that because it was a cool answer, like no one ever chooses that?
It's the only movie I could remember, honestly.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So we're excited. David Letterman is coming back.
Oh, stop it.
I'm
going to do so. Let me just clarify this.
Yes.
I am lucky, fortunate that the people at Netflix took interest in this project with the Radical Brothers that I'm going to be a part of. And I think there's a good chance that this will be the last project that I do. And as a result of that,
yes.
I if it's not really, really good, and I'm so pissed off at Seinfeld for that.
Comedians,
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I said, what about comedians on horseback getting coffee? And he wouldn't even do that.
Yes, but I had a thought for you. You mentioned Edward R. Murrow. What if you did your new Netflix show in the... Remember the Edward R. Murrow thing where he would actually interview people?
Yeah.
And he was on...
He would go to their homes via camera.
Yes, via camera.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe that's the thing.
Okay.
No?
That's fine.
We'll do that.
Come on.
No,
but it's six shows. There's no excuse for it not to be great. And I have such confidence in the... it's a three-legged table.
Yes.
And the other two legs, I really have confidence in. And I'll just have to... I don't know. I'll do what I can.
Everyone wants to know what you're doing every minute. Because
they
do. Every comedian I talk to, and I know a couple, they're always like, yeah, I wonder what Letterman's doing. Like is he, everyone thinks you're at that farm of yours in Montana or whatever the hell it is. But you're not, right?
I've spent quite a lot of the summer in Montana.
Yeah, and we're having fun there?
Yes, a lot of things to do there.
And people come to visit and stay with you?
People do come to visit, yeah. People have come and stayed and so forth.
Celebrity types.
Yes, celebrity types. Yeah.
And
you have to be careful because it's so remote.
Yes.
I can remember I had some friends out, they paid one of the kids who worked at the ranch to go into town to get them cigarettes. it's just that remote.
And do you worry, like how you worried about your guests? Do you worry, like now the pressure is, hey, they're coming all the way to Montana. Now it's upon me to have this great time with them.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a nightmare. Can you just can't you do what Jack Parr did and go to sleep and just leave?
Boy, I
have the butler's head.
Have the butler.
Well, now when you have people to your home,
my lovely home.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is the pressure like for you? Do you feel pressure?
Tremendous pressure.
Yeah. And are you happy when it goes well?
There are certain people who come over who are very easy.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel is great. He's going to spend 5 or 6 days with me at the end of the summer.
Yeah, but he's bringing his kids, and he's always smoking weed, so he's easy, right?
How did you know that? No, he gave that up.
No, he gave up the weed?
No. I that's his story to tell. I'm staying out of this one. I'm sure ABC doesn't want to hear that. You smoke weed, right?
No.
Not anymore. When I was in California. Quite a bit of weed.
And
no paranoia with weed?
Yes, I didn't even enjoy it. I can remember going to my dear friend George Miller's house.
Yes.
And he calls up and he says, come on over. So-and-so and her daughter are here. And we're smoking weed.
Yes.
So I'm new to California and I thought, well, I guess this is what you do. So we go over to George's apartment, and it's this is a very nice woman and her very nice daughter, and it's George, and they're passing around a joint. And so I'm the dope from Indiana, and I take another hit, and the young girl says, do you taste that? And I said, what? She said, that minty flavor. And I said, oh, it's mint-flavored marijuana. She says, no, that's a PCP. I get it confused with PCH.
Right, PCP.
One's the Pacific Coast Highway.
Right, no, PCP.
PCP,
so
yeah,
they had
yeah.
laced it with
yes.
PCP.
And I said, not wanting to be a complete dope, I say, oh, what is the PCP? And she says, oh, it's a animal tranquilizer.
Ugh.
And I said, you know what? I have some letters. I just got out of there, and I just thought, what? I don't want to. But why? And I just thought, do you need that animal tranquilizer?
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I would do this kind of thing, and I haven't for years. But we didn't even have any regard for what someone might lace that thing with or spray all over it.
Yeah, but I don't know enough about the active ingredient in marijuana, and is it compatible with animal tranquilizer? Is anything compatible with animal tranquilizer?
I think back when you were smoking weed and I was, that the weed was so weak that they would spray
right.
it with stuff
that's exactly right.
It's just weird.
Yeah, but you were all being experimented on.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing I didn't care for.
That's why I grew breasts.
Yeah.
Do you?
What?
Yes.
Wait a minute.
I don't want to talk about it. Do you look at the news now in light of Trump yesterday and all that? Do you say I'm glad I'm out of the late night game?
Yes.
Yeah. Because like everyone, there's so many late night shows, and they all of them use your sort of setup. But you set it up for them and the monologue and this and that.
Well, no, that came with Steve Allen. Came with Johnny Carson, came with everybody.
Yeah, sure. Steve Allen. But anyway, great. But
we can't talk about Jimmy Kimmel. He was Rolling Stone smoking weed.
Yeah, well, that was probably a poor thing to do, a poor choice for him.
Oh, so I apologize.
No, I'm sorry.
I shouldn't have brought it up.
No, Jimmy is a great house guest, and I don't feel this pressure with him. That I have to entertain him
But every minute, Tuesday morning, what do you do Tuesday morning? Well, it's Tuesday, Jimmy. What do we do?
Well, he gets up later than I'm up at the crack of dawn, and
right.
I go for a run, and I work out, and I eat
lunch. How far do you run?
Oh, God, I've had a really bad time of it. I had to start all over again. Right now, I'm just back to run. Like, I walk 2 miles, and then I run a mile.
Yeah.
It's not.
I did that. I went back to just running 4 miles as often as I could, because I used to be out for days.
I know, and it's just, I don't know what's going on with me. I can't recover quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm hurting.
Mm.
Yeah. It's just not fun.
Well, running, as they say, is really not the best thing one can do for their joints, their back, their neck.
So they say, but who cares what they say?
Exactly.
You know, but no, I would imagine, you know, you in Montana, though, it's different because it's so isolated that you really are responsible.
You really do have to be the entertainment.
Yeah, for people's good times. Yeah. What'd you have out there that was easy for you? I have my Jimmy Kimmel. Who do you have? Bill Murray?
We had some time with Bill Murray. That was fun.
Is that fun for you? Because he seems completely opposite you. He's like wild and he wants action. You know what I mean? He wants to go to parties. He wants to golf.
He wants to get on a golf course.
Yeah, you know.
Well, now here's the deal. He was there with one of his kids.
Right.
Lincoln. Sweet kid. Very sweet kid.
Right.
And we just had a great time.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
You'd want him back again.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there are many people you don't want back again because a lot of people, you want to go horseback riding? No. You want to go fishing? No. You want to go hiking? No.
Right.
You want to go kayaking? No. What do you want to do? Well, is there a tennis court? No, I'm sorry, we don't have a tennis court. Is there a swimming pool? No, there's a river.
Who was the biggest flop out in Montana?
I'm not going to say.
That's the show.
Yeah.
Dave's house guests. And we get a camera in there and we watch people and watch your misery just take over. I would watch that like crazy.
I mean, we've had meetings, Regina, Harry, and myself, at the end of the day. Did they say anything about when they were leaving? Harry, did you hear anything? Regina, no, they didn't say anything. What, I thought it was Tuesday. No, not Tuesday.
That's why I wouldn't stay at your house.
All right.
I wouldn't want to put you through that. No, I mean, yeah, some people, I mean, it's like wild, you know. But no, I mean, it's actually been kind of pleasant to have people out to the house. It hasn't been too relatives? Bad. Yeah. Well, listen, my kids come, you know, this kind of thing.
In-laws?
Yeah. Yeah, in-laws, sure.
Is that good?
Oh, yes. They're very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we have a good time. So, no, we do. We really do.
I'm just looking at the look on your face. That's all.
Well, look at my face. I had a good time. You have dinner with Paul Schaefer once a month, right?
Yeah.
How's that go? You love Paul.
I do love Paul. God, geez, I love Paul.
Do you think Paul... Well, you can't answer this honestly.
Yeah.
Or maybe you could. But Paul... Paul was an essential part of the show, or was it just something that worked out? In other words, you could have had any band leader. True?
I don't think so. First of all,
how calculated was hiring Paul?
Well, let me ask you a question. Look at the other shows.
Yes.
And you tell me about their band leaders.
You're right.
How do we feel about their band leaders?
They're sort of not. They don't break through. Mm. Paul does.
Paul's very funny, and I think a musical genius, and I love him, and I love his family.
Oh, my God. How are you? We're never going to see this Netflix show.
I just got back from India.
Yeah. By the way, you did.
Yeah.
Horrible place, right?
What did you do in India?
Robin left India so quick. She got to the airport, took a little drive, and then said, I'm leaving.
What town were you in, Robin?
I was in the place where you land, New Delhi.
Oh, New Delhi. By the way, Indira Gandhi, 2 years in a row, the number one airport in the world.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, it's a tough place, but
don't go outside of it.
So where did you go?
I actually couldn't get to where I wanted to go because there were some plane snafus.
She saw people going to the bathroom on the side of the road and then hightailed it out of there.
They have a big anti-public defecation campaign now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really serious.
So they cleaned that up?
Yeah. They're working on it.
By the way, true or false, did you audition for the movie Airplane?
Yes.
You did.
Yeah.
You wanted the part of Robert Hayes.
No, I didn't want the part. A nice kid. I can't remember his name.
Robert Hayes was the...
He was the guy, but the producers of it, there were two brothers.
Right.
And then there was a Pat Proft was the guy's name.
Right.
And they said, no, come out and audition. And I said, I'm no good. I'm not going to audition.
I'm not an actor.
Yeah, I'm not an actor. No. Come out. So I came, I went out.
Oh, poor you.
And I did the audition, and they brought in the co-star.
Yeah.
The lovely...
Julie...
Haggerty.
Haggerty, yeah.
And...
beautiful girl.
We did the audition, and they said, okay, we'll call you. And they called me back, and they said, well, we looked at the audition. You were right. You can't act.
Nice. They had to do that to you.
But it was fun. Right. I mean, I knew going in and it wouldn't have made a difference to me, wouldn't have made it, well, it would have ruined their movie had I gotten the part.
And just think, if you'd gotten the part, you maybe never would have been on late night television and changed the whole world and all of that.
Maybe.
Do you ever watch the movie? Did you go to see the movie?
Oh, yeah, the movie was tremendous.
You liked the movie?
Oh, yeah. How can you not like the movie?
I love that movie.
Yeah, very good.
Wow, Dave. You really are doing it all. It's awesome.
No, it's awesome seeing you.
I love it.
Well, I like seeing you. I like seeing you. This is, like I said, nobody would ask me.
But this is enough. You're not going to try dinner or anything.
No, we'll try dinner.
I'll
tell you something interesting about dinner.
Yeah.
I went to a dinner recently. My wife and I were invited to a dinner with people you know.
Steve?
Yeah.
All right.
And his lovely wife.
Yeah. Great couple.
Yeah. And so after dinner, I said, excuse me, I'm going to do this again.
Do it again. You can't do this on Netflix.
I just got back from
India. Comedians with phlegm. Great.
Comedians just back from India.
Right. Yeah, but you were with Steve.
Yeah.
So and other couples?
Other couples.
Steve always puts together great
nights. I know. There's no way you can live up to it.
No.
And so I said to Regina, we're on the way home. I said, well, how was that? Because she's now sitting next to Anne, and next to Anne is Steve.
Right.
And she says, I don't think I can do this again.
Right.
And I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, Anne is a lovely, lovely woman, and we get along just fine.
Yeah.
But Steve, I just can't talk to Steve. And I said, what do you mean you can't talk to Steve? And she says, he's esteemed.
Yes, she's in awe of him.
Yeah, and I said, he's esteemed. And she said, yeah.
You know what I find with Steve? You're talking to him at a dinner, and he comes out with things that are so brilliant.
I know.
And then I feel like I'm not living up to my end of the funny thing.
The best thing to do is get him in combination with Marty Short.
Oh, wow.
Because Marty Short just uses him like a speed bag.
Yeah.
Just goes to work on him left and right.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's fantastic.
That is so great. I would love to see that.
Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. And then you feel not like you're going to jump in and start beating up on Steve Martin.
Right.
But you feel like, okay, the ice is broken.
Pressure's off.
Yeah, the pressure is off.
But you see those two guys going at it, and you go, gee, there's no room for me in this.
That's right.
But maybe I have to learn to sit, be quiet, and enjoy what's happening.
There's nothing else you can do, because and my instinct is, conditioning, perhaps not instinct, is if there's a second of silence.
You have to fill it.
Yeah, and I end up telling a story that has no ending.
I had a great night at Steve's with Jimmy Fallon, and Lorne Michaels was there, and we're all there. And
Lorne Michaels seems to always be there.
Yes, they're very tight.
Yeah.
They're good. They go on vacation together. They're like Newhart and Rickles kind of thing, you know? So they go on vacation and stuff. And Lorne's telling these fabulous stories. I'm asking about when he wrote Laughing and all this other stuff. And then Steve's telling these stories. And then Jimmy Fallon gets up and starts playing the guitar and doing this really funny song that Steve asked him to do. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck am I going to do?
Yeah.
I'm not contributing enough. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I understand. And I guess that's the essential reason why for multiple years, dozens, I could. And then that night that Jack Parr went to bed, I said, that's it. I'm never going out again.
We're awkward.
Yeah. What did I do to Jack Parr that caused him to? It was 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. Where's Jack? We better leave, Dave. He's gone to bed.
And didn't even say goodnight.
No, didn't say goodnight because he was pissed off about something. Who knows what? Probably me. Probably me. I don't know.
But it probably wasn't anything. But who knows? I have people who are pissed off at me. And I'm like, when I hear why, it doesn't even make any sense to
me. Yeah, that's right. But you don't need that. You can stay at home and not get pissed off at anybody.
I know. Are you watching all these shows? No.
I haven't seen them.
Wow. You're not watching late night either, right? Late night shows.
No.
You know, I mean, the talk show guys.
Oh, the talk show guys.
You know what I mean. Guys who do what you used to do.
No, I can't watch them.
Why?
I'll tell you, I can't stop watching MSNBC now.
Me neither. I'm Rachel Maddow, something, huh? Isn't she fantastic?
Unbelievable. They've got a pretty good lineup. And then Brian Williams at the end of the evening is fantastic.
He's doing a good job.
And Nicole Wallace. She's great. Nicole Wallace could have an 11:30 show. You know, she's Fantastic.
MSNBC is so successful now because they're the opposition. And the opposition is always way more interesting.
Yeah.
In fact, like Fox News actually used to be interesting because they were against Obama. Uh-huh. Even though, you know, politically, I loved Obama. But they were against, there was some sort of angst there. Now, this MSNBC, they're on fire. I mean, they went berserk yesterday. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I personally understand why. I don't know how you could think that anyone marching with Nazis is are good people.
I think he needs to resign. And I think there's a way that this can be done. You just get together some people, like his sons, Don Jr. and Don Jr. Get those two guys together.
Both Dons, yeah.
Yeah. Probably Regis, put him on the panel.
Regis.
And Gary Busey.
Right.
And his daughter, the youngest
Ivanka.
One.
Ivanka.
Trumpina. Yeah. What?
Trumpina Tiffany.
Yeah. Is there a Trumpina? Yes.
And just go to him and have him sign some papers. And just move him down to Mar-a-Lago. They'll build a little Oval Office for him down there. And no, you're still president, Dad.
Right.
But
not tell him.
I mean, the impeachment thing will take forever.
Right.
And may not end with a conviction. But don't you think we've had enough? And the thing I'm tired of is people, can you believe what he did? Yeah, we can believe what he did. He's been doing it for 2 years now. It's time to go. It was an experiment, an outsider. It didn't work.
And one of the all-time great talk show guests on your show.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. And I thought your answer was very insightful. I forget where you were interviewed somewhere recently, and they said, well, gee, you used to have Trump on your show.
Yeah.
And you said, as I would say, he was a fabulous guest.
Yeah.
He would say things that were outrageous, and that's good television.
He could take a punch.
Right.
But I didn't know he was a jerk. I mean, it turns out he's a jerk. And like I say, it was an experiment. We put an outsider in the office. Well, it hasn't worked, so just resign. Just resign. We'll take it a step at a time. We'll see what happens after that. But for the time being, we've had enough.
Do you think if you were doing a late-night talk show right now, you would have to talk about Trump? Or would you kind of take the attitude like, everyone's talking about Trump?
No, you'd have to talk about it. And do you talk about him every day?
No, because I feel there's so much dialogue going on. And I don't know. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's like I'm everywhere I go. I go to a dinner party or everyone is talking about Trump every second.
Right.
And really, what is left to say?
That's right. And people say to me a version of that situation. They say, don't you wish you were on the air now to be able to talk about Trump? And I always say it was like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, you're never done. It goes on and on and on. And once you start, you can't quit.
Take one question.
Yeah, Dave Chappelle's take on it was that it's too easy. There's too much.
Yeah.
And everybody's picking at it.
Boy, Chappelle's killing it, huh? I mean, did you watch his Netflix specials?
No.
Stand-up? Watch those.
Okay.
What about Louis C.K.?
Yeah. Yeah, I like Louis.
Louis's good, right?
Yeah, Louis's very good, yeah. Yeah.
Can't believe he used to write for your show.
Yeah, he used to. I had so many great writers, and I can remember I came to work one morning, and outside my door is a stack of pages about this thick.
Yeah.
And on top is a handwritten note from Louis C.K. And it says, here's material I submitted to your show that was never approved. Louis C.K. I quit.
Oh, that's so great. He comes over my house and we have a good time.
Really?
Yeah, Louis.
Who else?
Oh, geez. Really?
Yeah.
But are you going to say who comes to your house?
Nobody comes to my house.
Jerry comes over my house a lot.
Jerry Seinfeld. Well, you and
we live near each other.
Yeah. You own like several miles of public beach.
Yeah, that's right. And no one's allowed on that. No, but yeah, I enjoy Jerry very much.
Yeah. He's a very smart fellow.
A smart guy. We have great conversations.
Have you had him to the house in Montana?
No. Have Jerry.
No.
In Montana.
No, I don't see Jerry on a horse. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Jerry ain't going to Montana.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Yeah.
Let Ralph ask one question, then I'll let you out of here. I've probably kept you too long. What is it, Ralph? Quickly.
Hey, quick. So, Howard, you know, I was a huge fan of yours from the beginning and a huge fan of Dave's from the beginning, all the way back to the morning show. I'm just like, and when you two came together, when Dave had you on, it was so great. So, Dave, my question for you is, like, what clicked for you with Howard that you said, like, you know, not a lot of people knew who he was and you just want to have him on? on? What, was there something that hit you?
I have a theory about that. Thank you, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph.
A lot of people don't know. Dave was on radio. You started in college radio.
That's correct.
The station was a classical radio station.
Right.
And you went to the program director and said, we should be playing rock music. And you actually went on like at midnight and started playing rock music, right?
No.
That's not true?
None of that's true.
None of that's true?
None of that's true.
And you didn't smash records? You didn't
no.
do any of that?
No. Would it help if I did?
I've heard your audition.
I remember the day the president of the university came into the control room and said to me, stop smashing records.
No, come on, tell the truth. You did not play rock on your college radio station?
It was middle of the road. Remember when things were formatted middle of the road?
You were a very good announcer.
Oh, Howard.
Now, come on. I'll play your tapes. Have you ever heard your tapes?
No, don't play the tapes.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you the thing about
I'm going to play them.
No.
Can I? Let's listen to you reading a commercial in college radio.
Please don't.
Really?
No.
Why? Would that give you just agita?
I'll drop my pants and run through the lobby.
You were so good.
Don't, please. Now listen to me.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm telling the host of the show to listen to me.
listen to me.
Let's return to Ralph's question.
Yes.
The disembodied voice of Ralph.
You know Ralph. Ralph's been up to your show many times doing my hair.
Does he ever see Ralph? No.
No. One thing, Dave never would see you before the show.
Howard fit the role of iconoclastic cult youthful entertainer when he came over to WNBC Radio. And he was on in the afternoons, and you couldn't help. The building was full. It was palpable of the energy of Howard Stern, and it was not to be ignored. And you were just, I don't know, four or five floors different from where our studio was. So we had to explore this. We had to exploit this, and we did, and it was great.
I was so excited. I remember the first time I came on. I didn't ever thought about what you wear on a talk show, and I came on, and I just had the most horrible outfit. I think you pointed it out to the audience that it was like this ridiculous look.
Well, none of us knew what to wear. I was.
But you had a suit on.
Oh, yeah, but you know. How old were you when you first came on?
Oh, gosh. I was probably 29 or 30.
Yeah, well, I was 33, 34.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, neither of us should have been in show business.
But then I saw myself on your show, and I said, I know, I'm going to dress now in a kind of hip way. And I wore like leather pants with brown boots, and it was even worse. I should have stuck with what my original thing was. It was just a nightmare. You know what I did? Everyone was excited you were coming on. So we were having our staff meeting here, and I said, you got to see this. I have an envelope of material I was going to do on, I didn't know how long you were going to be on. So I used to, whenever I'd go on your show, I would make notes about what I wanted to talk about.
Right.
So I still have notes, like literally hundreds of notes of things I'm going to talk about when I go on the Dave Letterman show again.
Great.
So I started reading to them, and they were like, oh, I wish you'd go on. I go, there's no more show. I can't go on. But I did have all this material.
But go on the shows. There's still shows. Go on your buddy Jimmy Kimmel. You go on Jimmy Kimmel's show, right?
Yeah, once in a while. I don't like doing it. You know what? I feel like I got enough when I used to do your show, and it was enough.
Let me. My situation was, first of all, nobody asked me to go on. And secondly, I was grateful that nobody asked me to go on because they make you, okay, we need 12 minutes. So give us a funny story. Okay, how long is that going to take? 2 minutes? All right, give us another funny story. And I said, I can't stop talking now.
Right.
I can't go on and be funny for 11 minutes. Maybe in an hour there will be a funny moment or two, but please don't make me invent a story about when my son came home and vomited.
And get it out quick.
Yeah. No.
Well, listen, I've probably kept you too long.
How long have we been here?
An hour 20 or so.
Well, let's go look for apartments.
Yeah, together. You still have an apartment in the city or no?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
I was there last night.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, good, says Howard.
I like that. I was wondering where you were last night.
Now, you'd come to Montana, right?
No, I can't say I would. Yeah. That would be just
Robin,
crazy.
Would you come to Montana?
Listen, why not?
I'd love to come to Montana.
Well, Robin will go anywhere. Robin went to India. I mean, she'll go anywhere. She's ready to hop on a plane. Well, look.
Uh-huh.
You've done it.
Yeah. Listen, thank you. I really mean this thank you because I didn't really want to do anything else. And so thank you for allowing me.
When you were up here and I said to you, you said, gee, I said, I would love to have you on. And you were like, okay, I'll do it. I'm always shocked when you want to do it, but
no, I really
I'm very grateful.
And I the truth of it is we kind of engineered it, so I invited myself on.
No, I love that you were here. I love that you're doing Netflix. And because you put me on the spot, I would absolutely do the show.
Yeah, because the Radical Brothers, they're the brains behind all of this. And
no, they're not.
Yeah, you know where they are. You ought to meet them. I've been to several meetings.
Why did you have me on the show at the last Don Rickles appearance? You kept me there with Don Rickles, which I thought was great. I was so
mm-hmm.
honored.
Mm-hmm.
But were you nervous that Don wasn't on his game and that maybe it would be better if I sat there? I was always wanting to ask you that.
Well, whether Don was or was not on his game, the idea of Don Rickles and Howard Stern together just made pretty good sense.
It was such an honor for me. I don't think I added anything to it, but...
just the visual, I think, was
pretty
strong.
Fun, yeah. And we all put on cowboy hats.
I love this...
Do you remember that?
What a show.
Yeah.
But I love the story you told about how you were somewhere with Don and this and that and this and that, and he started making fun of you, and you thought, oh, this is going to be great. He's going to make fun of me the way he does everybody else.
Yeah.
And you said, I really didn't enjoy it.
I didn't. Oh, my God. I have such a thin skin. I was like, wow, everyone talks about it. So complimentary. But Don could cut right to the fucking worst part of you. Did you like it when he would sit there and
yes.
make fun? You did.
Yeah.
Well, but it was on camera. You know what I mean? Did he ever do it to you off?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he did.
It would never stop.
You went to dinner with him, right?
Many, many times.
Oh, my God. I went to dinner with him one night at a guy's house, and there were a lot of famous people there. He's sitting and eating dinner, being quiet. I figured, well, maybe, you know, he's getting old. Finishes eating, he gets up and starts ripping everyone a new asshole like yeah. I had never heard before. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy is so smart and funny. I idolized Don Rickles.
Yeah.
So the idea that you had me on the show with him, I was like, I can't even believe this.
It's interesting that you idolized him, but then the reason you idolized him when it was turned on you...
It was horrible.
You didn't care for it.
I found that it's funny when he does it to everyone else. This is what I discovered. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
All right, look.
I got to go. I think.
I know. The Radical Brothers.
The Radical Brothers.
You are going to be on Netflix.
Yeah.
David Letterman. Will it be called The David Letterman Show?
No, I don't know what it's... I don't know.
You need a name for it.
I don't want a name for it. It'll just be there.
What?
Do you watch... You watch the Netflix
stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're doing great stuff.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I have great admiration for them and the Radical Brothers.
Boy, these Radical Brothers are really important to you.
They really are.
Yeah.
Because it's the first time in 30 years I will be working with an entirely separate entity in terms of production.
And it's two brothers.
It's I don't know, at meetings, right. There's like six or seven of them.
like six brothers.
Yeah.
Are they real brothers, or is this one of those like things that everybody just takes the same last name?
Right.
I think it's one of those things, Robert.
It's like the Three Stooges. It was Larry Fine, but...
Excellent question.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Okay, I do have to go because I...
You know what? The next time you come in, talk about your family. You're getting bored?
I'm getting bored.
How do you think
it's
I feel?
It's a Jack Park kind of thing. Yeah.
You're going to go to bed?
Yeah.
You can't leave. You just can't get up and leave in the middle of an interview. That's not right.
No, I know it's not right.
That's what Richard Lewis does. If he calls you, he hangs up and doesn't say goodbye.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Jack Parr move now that I'm thinking about
it. That's right. I wish I could do that. And there's a term for that that I've been told is called the Irish goodbye.
Oh, really?
And it's happened to me numerous times where you're in a group of people. It would be like, say, you're like people are at your house. You have Jimmy Kimmel is at your house.
Yeah.
And Seinfeld is at your house.
Right.
And other people that you don't want to name, they're all at your house. And everybody has dinner and they're having a great time. And then it's like, where'd Howard? Where's Howard?
But by the way, that happens.
Well, that's
Howard
does that
I do pull
all the
that.
Time.
I do it all the time. And people appreciate it from me.
They do?
There's somebody, Billy Joel. Okay, there's another guy. He goes, I love coming to your house for dinner. We eat and then everyone goes home because we know you're going to bed. And he goes, that's what I want to do too.
Yeah.
So everyone knows the deal when you come to my house. We all go to sleep.
See, to me, that is a lovely thing to have acquired because the responsibility doesn't really end until you've got everybody in their coats and safely in their cars.
That's it. Everyone's had a good time.
But if you evaporate, That's great. It's, you know.
Yeah. Goodbye. Good night.
Howard evaporates.
Enough. I evaporate. I don't want to ruin
he
it.
He lies. You know, he doesn't say good night to people.
I understand Mr. Parr's thing. He was probably like, you guys have a good time. I'll go to sleep. You probably won't miss me.
No. Feelings had been hurt in this case.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, you know, God rest his soul, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, I want to say one thing in closing.
Okay.
You've done it all.
Uh-huh.
You've invented something new.
Oh, stop it, Howard.
You're an innovator.
No, please don't do this.
I was
please.
Right there with President Obama when he handed you that medal that's in Indiana somewhere.
Please don't do this.
I like it.
It was great fun to see you,
Robin. Where are you going?
Why is it not okay to say that we appreciate you?
If you get up and leave now, I'll play your college radio show.
Uncle Gimpy. God, no.
Don't think I don't know about that.
Howard.
That was a good bet, Uncle Gimpy.
Howard, what? Please.
Listen, we all had to start somewhere.
Let's don't let this...
I should only play you my early radio shows. You would. It's so bad.
You know what? We've had a lovely time. It's been so much fun. And if I could, I'd just go to bed right now.
You're so uncomfortable with praise. I'm going to have each member of my staff come in and praise you right now.
No, don't do that.
All right. David Letterman.
Yeah.
I say that.
Let me ask you one question.
Thank you.
Did you have a vacation this summer?
Yes, I did.
How long?
A week. But I have another 2 weeks coming up.
What will you do?
Oh, well, as I said, Jimmy's coming
for
a couple of days.
Yeah, okay.
And I have hobbies. I paint a little.
Yeah, paint. Yeah, I have a lovely painting you gave my wife.
I play chess.
You used to take pictures of your wife.
Yes.
Play chess.
You'll do that once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
You know what? This came up yesterday, Dave. Do you have hobbies?
Yeah, I have hobbies.
Yeah, he's into ham radio.
I'm not into
still doing that.
He had some sort of setup in his basement.
Who are you talking to?
I never did
you have short wave or something?
I didn't have short wave.
And you were like
wave.
Amazed
no,
how
please,
many.
No,
I know this is true.
None of this is true.
Is that really? Are you lying now?
No, I'm not lying. You're lying.
We're going to hook you up to a lie detector
Fine,
test to find out if you're at the ham radio. I seem to remember
and
something about that.
And I was looking forward to this.
What is your hobbies? What are your hobbies?
I like fishing.
Okay.
I know Jimmy Kimmel likes to fish.
Sure.
Yeah.
I fish with him.
No, you don't.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you go fishing?
Well, see, now you're making it about me. But
you're the one who said I went fishing.
Years ago, I had a house on a lake. And the lake was, there was so many fish.
What state?
In New York. And we went.
Everything happens in New York.
Yeah, I don't leave New York. You have no idea. I'm not looking to travel. And we would go on the boat, but then I stopped fishing because you're going to love this. Someone should animate this. A giant swan came down and started attacking Jimmy and I when we were fishing, and they have a wingspan, and they stand up on the water, and they come at you. And Jimmy and I were like, we got to beat up a swan. And we didn't. And it was attacking us. And we got off, and I said, that's it. I'm done with fishing. No more. That was the end of it. But we did go fishing.
This is the weed talking.
No, it is no weed. I am telling you. These things stand up on the...
A swan attacked you and Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
But what a fantastic obituary that could have been.
My wife was watching from the shore. She said, I only wish I had had my phone so I could have recorded this.
Yeah.
Because it was the funniest thing she ever saw.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, but... So you fish, and what else do you do for the rest of the day?
I raise swans.
No, come on. What do you do?
In the winter, I like to ski.
Oh, you ski?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
What do you mean you ski?
I didn't know you were that athletic.
Do you ski?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You get scared off by a swan.
Yeah, no. And, I'm too old to learn. What age were you when you learned?
He is 63. You know what?
Is that true?
Yeah. You got to look out for those owls. You ever seen an owl, Howard?
Yes. I rescued an owl.
Oh, you rescued an owl?
With my wife, yeah. Yeah.
Crows are bad.
Yeah.
Stay away from the crows.
You ski and you
pigeon?
Learned it.
You
learned
have you it. Ever seen a pigeon?
Yes, I have. At 63?
Yes, 63 I learned to ski.
Look at you.
Yeah.
I can't believe what you're saying.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much.
All right. Have I kept you too long? Have I kept you too long?
Well, I'm not worried about me. I'd stay here all day, but I can't stand the idea of people just, you know...
Dave, I want to say something. I don't know if I'll ever see you
again.
No, you're
not going to say anything.
I love you.
I love you as well.
Wait, what are you doing?
I'm shaking your hand. Right. God bless you, Howard.
I tell you what I'd like to
goodbye,
do.
Goodbye, Robin.
I'm going to turn off the microphones.
Yeah.
So I can say goodbye to you properly, okay?
No, let's just
no,
hug.
No. Stop it.
No, let's
stop
just hug it. And that'll be it.
And I want to tell you something personal that I don't want to tell you on the air.
Okay.
All right. And I mean, and I don't even know that you'll care, and I hope maybe you won't or what.
All right. I've stayed too long. I know
stayed too long. Yeah. All right. Listen to me.
Good night.
You were fabulous.
You were fabulous.
Everyone loved it.
All right, stop it.
All right.
Here we go. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Take that medal you got from President Obama and bring it back to your house.
Okay.
So Harry can see it.
All right. Fine.
All right.
Thank you.
No Irish goodbye. Let me say a proper goodbye.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
We'll be back right after these words. David Letterman, everyone. Netflix. Big show coming. Radical Brothers.
Talking off the cuff right now. Steve from Florida. I am that guy to hate now. Steve from Florida. Hashtag loser. Steve from Florida. Hashtag scum bottle. Steve from Florida.
The Howard Stern Show.